From Interlock Media Associates, this is a sample of material for our upcoming public radio series, Vietnam, Radio First Termer, an examination of the role of radio in the Vietnam War.
Good morning, Vietnam!
In Vietnam, the airways were alive with news, propaganda, pirate transmissions, and always entertained.
From Saigon, ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
From the land of Georgia, the coast.
Veterans often speak of their first moments in Vietnam, choking heat, soaking humidity. The new draftees arrived fresh off the transport planes at Da Nang or Tan Son Nhut, and before long, these first termers, as they were called, found themselves deep in the lowland rice paddies, or more often, typing requisition forms. Either way, their radios were within earshot.
From Saigon, this is the American Forces Vietnam Network, presenting Million Dollar Music for the Aquarian Age.
More than 3 million Americans served in Vietnam. They were not only fighting an elusive enemy, but alienation and isolation as well. Radio was a lifeline to home. 24 hours a day, the Armed Forces Vietnam Network, or AFVN, broadcast music, news, and features. Their 11 state-of-the-art AM stations transmitted throughout South Vietnam. Actress Chris Noel hosted A Date with Chris.
The person who wrote this letter signed off like this. I am not going to sign this as I am not important. What is important are the men who are fighting for our nation and for what we believe in.
AFVN did not have a monopoly on the airwaves. GIs broadcast their own pirate radio, like Dave Rabbit's program, Radio First Termer.
Good evening again, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host for the next 3 hours of hard acid rock music, Dave Rabbit, and my studio engineer, Pete Sadler. For those of you who have just recently come into the Republic of Vietnam, I'd like to give you a little information about it so your mind won't be quite so blown. We're an underground radio station here, and we say what we feel like saying, and we bring the truth to the first termers in the Republic of Vietnam. We also bring you hard acid rock music all through the night. The up-to-date music of today's American youth. Carlos Santana, Evil Ways,
with a flip of the dial, the GIs could hear Hanoi Hannah urging them to defect.
You're listening to our broadcast to American GIs involved in the Vietnam War.
You are new here, and we don't expect you to believe us when we tell you how bad it is. It is a flat, scary jungle, thick with scrub trees and tall grass, hot and wet in intermittent rain and strong tropical dragonflies and Viet Cong sniper bullets. Get out while you are still alive and before it's too late.
This wealth of competing broadcast signals, the military-run AFVN, the GI-operated underground broadcasts, and propaganda from Radio Hanoi, could well be considered Vietnam's other air war. Radio in Vietnam was the subject of several veterans' meetings organized by Interlock. Vietnam veterans described how their radios were cherished pieces of field equipment. In Philadelphia, Jerry Irby.
My radio was just like my rifle. My radio was wrapped up in black tape, wrapped up in a Prick 25 battery bag, taped down to keep the moisture out. music was important to me, whether it came from AFVN or it came from my own personal music. But music kept me sane.
In New York, veteran Eddie German.
In general, when we'd be out in the bush, far away up in the highlands, we had transistor radios, small ones. And in the middle of the day, way up north near the DMZ, you could listen to Diana Ross and the Supremes. We were hearing all the latest records, all the latest music. The guys used to take their rifle and hold it like a guitar and, you know, just imitate a guitar while the music, while Jimi Hendrix was playing. Rock and roll was a big thing in Vietnam.
Vietnam was the first war fought to a rock and roll soundtrack. Music was everywhere, from the boredom of base camp to the chaos of combat. Even at 30,000 feet, Roger Steffens could pick up broadcasts on his receiver. The result was sometimes surreal.
I remember in the planes, we could pick up AFVN on the headsets. And we were flying out of Pleiku one day, and it was almost unlimited visibility. And I remember watching off toward the west as a rocket was launched. And you could see the fire coming out of the tail of the rocket, and it described this arc, and it hit a fire base. It hit a barracks, direct hit, and we watched that entire barracks blown sky high with these bodies hurtling through the air hundreds of feet. And I'm sitting there on the airplane watching this American barracks blow up as I hear Eric Burdon and the Animals singing, "We gotta get out of this place if it's the last thing we ever do."
Some criticized AFVN's programming for being too superficial, but Bob Casey thinks such programs were exactly what the soldiers needed.
We gave the guys as much stateside sound as if WABC, which was then the god of all AM radio stations in the United States, is almost as if WABC was right in the middle of Vietnam. Not talking about the war, talking about other things. I thought it was important that I get their heads out of Vietnam, get their heads out of the military, and to go back to the sock ops in high school, to go back to those days of late grammar school and through high school. I took everybody away from Vietnam, and I brought them back home to very pleasant moments.
Entertaining. Music-minded. Informative. Swinging. The American Forces Vietnam Network. Four little words, but they signify over 6 years of broadcasting service to American servicemen in Vietnam. AFVN.
It could just as well have been the sound of any hometown American station. Until the ads came on.
The high you get from Skag is great. The way your hassles fade makes it seem the best thing going. But then the need for more starts and the high doesn't seem fine anymore. Skag only leads to one end, addiction. When you play with heroin, there are no winners, only losers.
Roger Steffens produced public service announcements for AFVN. The spots warned GIs to take their malaria pills or to be wary of booby-trapped vehicles.
Everybody hated taking the malaria pills. It gave a lot of the soldiers the trots, but at the same time, it prevented us from getting a pretty awful disease. And so he wanted to write some spots that would take the fear out of taking these pills, and the character he came up with was called Count Malaria. And I played that, and Scott played all the other parts and various voices.
The American Forces Vietnam Network presents the very infectious adventures of Count Malaria. We find a clerk typist working busily in a tent near Pleiku.
Good evening.
Who are you?
Count Malaria. Have you taken a chloroquine and primaquine phosphate tablet within the past 7 days?
You mean a malaria pill? No chance of that ever happening.
Goody! Glump!
You bit me! I don't feel so good.
How about that? Another unprotected serviceman bitten by the nefarious Count Malaria. If only he had taken his malaria pill.
That's really kind of strange.
That he bit you? No, tents don't have doors.
We did satchel charges under Santa Claus's sled. I'll never forget that one, you know. Hey, Santa, did you check under the sleigh for satchel charges?
Ho, 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 ho. No, no need for that. Let's just get the old reindeer in.
Very good.
Be sure to pull. First echelon maintenance on your Jeep. Don't take any chances in the Republic of Vietnam.
A very interesting sound, isn't it? Sometimes a sound like this is a warning. Stay away, as in the case of a time bomb. But sometimes explosives can be hidden in the strangest of places and make no sound at all. Until you, searching for a war souvenir, touch them.
This month, you will have an opportunity to learn a great deal about our South Vietnamese allies. February 17th is the first day of the Lunar New Year, or more simply, Tet. Tet is like Christmas, New Year's, Easter, and the 4th of July combined. For the Vietnamese, it is a time of solemnity, gaiety, and hope. It is also a time to look at the past, enjoy the present, and look forward to the future.
Here comes one of the fire teams we have to get down now.
Dirt is being kicked up all around us. Some of it splashing over me. This is a little bit too close for comfort right here. They were even firing some rockets. I can see some smoke coming up from down in the air.
The Tet Offensive of 1968 marked a turning point in the war. The conflict spread from remote provinces to the outskirts of Saigon.
Fantastic, fantastic. Just 150 to 200 feet, I think those rockets landed from me. Amazingly accurate fire.
Morale among American troops plummeted. Navy veteran Steve Brown.
By the second tour in 1968, however, after the Tet Offensive, things had really seemed to have soured a lot for a lot of the personnel. They were looking forward to getting out, and the more that the people were going against being there, the more they seemed to try to hide into or escape to the music.
Good morning. I'm Marine Corporal Rick Fredrickson with 5 minutes of news compiled from commercial and military news agencies.
Comprehensive coverage of the war and reports of the peace movement back home rarely reached GIs over AFVN. It was apparent that the war they were fighting and the one they heard about on the radio were not always the same. Jordan St. John was a newscaster at AFVN.
When I did radio news in Saigon, this was during the late 60s. In early 70s, it was at the height of the anti-war movement here in the United States. But on American Forces Network, we weren't allowed to give any news about that at all. When I put together a radio newscast, when I had it finished, I had to take it and bring it to an Army captain who was an artillery officer and knew nothing about journalism, and he would look through it and he'd red pencil out anything he didn't want mentioned. So we weren't allowed to say anything about the anti-war demonstrations, nothing about Jane Fonda unless it was negative. Nothing about things like the Cambodian incursion in early 70 that Nixon ordered. Very rigid control and censorship.
Infantryman Jerry Clark.
I was up north for 6 months, and I didn't know what was going on down south because they never said what was going on down south. You would listen to the news, and they would not even tell you what was going on in country, as we called it, in Vietnam itself.
It wasn't just the news that was officially sanitized. Bob Casey.
We had to cut the middle of a song out. The cow sills and hair. Oh, say, can you see my eyes if you can't? We had to cut that piece out of the record because some major somewhere thought that was derogatory towards our national anthem. And here, the cow sills, the all-American milk-drinking family of 1968-69, we had to censor them to the troops over in Vietnam. We had to forbid the playing of Cloud Nine by the Temptations. It had to do with marijuana. Or Satisfaction by the Stones because it had risque lyrics to it. We were censoring stuff to the guys that are in blood and guts. The last people in the world you'd want to censor anything from.
The issue of censorship became public on New Year's Eve, 1970, when AFVN anchorman Bob Lawrence surprised his audience by departing from his approved newscast. He declared that AFVN announcers were not free to tell the truth, and that those who tried did not remain in their posts for long.
In the military in Vietnam, I found that a newscaster at AFVN is not free to tell the truth. and in essence, to tell it like it is. MACV and the MACV Office of Information have seen to it that all newscasters who are dedicated through their work are sent to other areas, in some cases off the air completely.
Later that week, Walter Cronkite reported Lawrence's accusations on the evening news, prompting a congressional inquiry. Lawrence spent the remainder of his tour as a chaplain's assistant near the demilitarized zone.
There you have Otis Redding. Dog Buster Radio Program. This is Army Specialist Scott Manning. At 19 minutes after 8, Friday morning...
AFVN DJ Scott Manning confronted censorship in his own way. His running gag about drugs got by the editors and officers at the network for 2 weeks.
Music and more. And we are standing by for another report from Flying Specialist Parker Lane.
Oh, now stop.
Park Lanes were a brand of French cigarette. The packages look kind of like Marlboro packages. They're red and white. But the Park Lanes that the GIs got on the streets of Saigon and probably through the rest of the country, somewhere in a little room, somewhere in the Chinese section, they had carefully opened up the bottom of the Park Lane packages. They'd taken out all the cigarettes. They'd carefully emptied all the tobacco out of each one, and they had stuffed them full of marijuana. It was very good marijuana, too. And then they carefully closed up each cigarette, put them all back in the package, and sealed it back up again with tax stamps on the bottom and everything. And you could buy these from pedicab drivers on the streets of Saigon for about $2 a package. So we were doing some mock Saigon traffic reports, and actually I think the name we started using was Parker Lane or something like that, flying high over Saigon.
We're standing by. Wait a minute. I think contact has been made with Flying Specialist Parker Lane in the AFE at radio, turquoise with olive drab lettering, traffic helicopter.
Hi, Scotty, we're over Saigon right now. You may be asking yourself how we got from Da Nang to Saigon in an hour. Repeat of one of yesterday's reports. We figured there isn't any reason to think the traffic situation will get better overnight. Anyhow, the best thing to do this morning is avoid the Tudor Street area. The street is choked with early morning delivery trucks. Even the sidewalks are crowded with just unloaded cases of tea bags.
Vietnam was the first war in which GIs in the field actually broadcast radio they produced for each other. This pirate radio was facilitated by the troops' ready access to a wealth of high-tech communications hardware. These programs will be rebroadcast for the first time on Vietnam, Radio First Termer.
Blowing a little grass now. Going back into music by Steppenwolf called The Pusher. Speaking of the pusher, brothers and sisters, if you happen to be down by the Magic Finger Lounge anytime tonight, keep away from the Korean at the front door. He's pushing some bad H. I repeat, he's pushing some bad H.
Doug Wellman found that broadcast equipment could be taken almost anywhere.
In 1972, we were challenging each other to see what kinds of pirate signals we could broadcast. And my joke had to be taking a turntable up in this aircraft. And on the flight I did it, we had a crew chief who got an air medal or some medal for shooting down 7 of 11 MiGs. He was playing electric war game next to me, and I'm broadcasting Louie Louie and Aqualung to these pilots.
Veteran Mark Lumpkin.
Some of the pirate stations I picked up were guys had were in a communication unit. And what they did was they got tapes from back in the state. People would just tape songs on cassettes. And they would play it on one of the frequencies that weren't regularly used for dust offs or emergencies. And you could pick up their songs. It would be a guy imitating like he's a boss jock back in the States. And he'll put a cassette on. And you'll just have like a radio jam, and it would be just like a half an hour or so.
Late at night, Barry Romo used his field radio to swap information and music with fellow GIs using frequencies reserved for emergency military communications.
We'd announce the freak or the music opening at night, which was after the other staff officers left, and say something, which I don't have the slightest idea what would be said, some appropriate statements would go on for a while, which were thought to be witty and may or may not have been. And then a song or two would get played, and then it would open up for request. The biggest request was leaving on a jet plane. People would start calling up and asking, do you have this, do you have that? Well, if you don't have this, do you have something close to it?
Instant request line. Spencer Davis Group. I'm a man. This is a dedication to the United States Army that was called in by General Creighton W. Abrams.
You're listening to a sample assembly of Interlock Media Associates production in progress, Vietnam, Radio First Termer. The series, once complete, will air over public radio stations nationwide, as well as additional networks overseas.
We now present Lord Rawhall speaking to England.
To say the British Empire is in danger today would be a very feeble understatement.
The use of radio for propaganda purposes did not begin in Vietnam. In fact, it dates back to the early days of World War II. The Nazis led the way with Lord Haw-Haw, whose exaggerated upper-class monologues denouncing Western leaders were broadcast to Britain.
Until Roosevelt and Churchill so needlessly provoked Japan into taking up arms, the greater part of the British Empire felt itself outside the war zone.
Later in the war, the alluring voices of Axis Sally and Tokyo Rose beckoned American soldiers to lay down their arms.
Hello, you fighting orphans of the Pacific. How's Trix? This is after her weekend, Annie, back on the air strictly under Uranon. Reception okay? It better be, because this is all request night.
The North Vietnamese continued the tradition of using female voices for wartime propaganda. Hanoi Hannah was the name coined by GIs for a collection of voices that addressed American servicemen daily.
How are you, G.I. Joe? It seems to me that most of you are poorly informed about the going of the war. They say nothing about a correct explanation of your presence over here. Nothing is more confused than to be ordered into a war to die or to be maimed for life without the faintest idea of what's going on.
Veteran Renee Parker heard Hanoi Hannah every morning.
Hanoi Hannah, she came on three times a day. She'd wake you up in the morning telling you, okay, the 2nd or the 25th was wiped out. Now she's giving you, you know, a warning. She's like letting you know ahead of time that it ain't no tomorrow for you.
Correspondent Don North has covered international conflicts for 20 years, and he believes the best propaganda first gains credibility through accurate reporting.
So they were making reference to realities that these GIs could relate to. In a three-minute commentary, for instance, making a lot of local references like... You'd better be careful. You should go home now before it's too late. Or you might get blown up by a bomb like that restaurant in Saigon a few months ago. And everybody knew that was the Mekong restaurant that had been blown sky high.
This was one such warning on Radio Hanoi.
You are a long, long way from Fort Riley now. And there is no JC Cafe in town on Washington Street where you can sit around the counter eating hamburgers and sipping coffee without having to be afraid a bomb might go off, like it did at that restaurant in Saigon a few weeks back.
Eddie German remembers that in an effort to divide American troops, Radio Hanoi broadcasts were often directed at minority soldiers.
First of all, she was appealing to minority people who were fighting in Vietnam, black people, Puerto Ricans, Hispanics, American Indians. So she used to say, come on, what you doing, soul brother? What are you doing fighting over here when at home down south you can't eat in a white restaurant? What are you doing fighting? This is not your war, soul brother. That's what she used to say. And after that, she would play Aretha Franklin, maybe three records straight. she used to play the best rock and roll and soul music on the radio, which is what we wanted to hear. We didn't care about what she was saying, really. We were just listening to the music.
In addition to North Vietnamese propaganda broadcasts, the U.S. government sponsored covert radio campaigns in Vietnam. In one such endeavor, U.S. Special Forces dropped transistor radios along the Ho Chi Minh Trail, where they could be found and used by the Viet Cong. The tiny radios were designed to receive only one frequency, a signal coming from a U.S. psychological operations station. The campaign was called Radio Mimic because the disinformation being broadcast was made to sound as if it originated from a radio station in Hanoi. America's experience with radio in Vietnam continues to be applied today. The U.S. beams Radio Marti to Cuba, weaving anti-Castro propaganda with news, soap operas, and music. In El Salvador, anti-government rebels sway public opinion via the clandestine Radio Venceremos. Touted for its accuracy, it's widely quoted in the international press. In Nicaragua, a group of Vietnam veterans, sympathetic to the Sandinistas, have started to produce Radio Incoming, an English language program directed at Americans supporting the Contras in Honduras and Costa Rica. Since the beginning of World War II, the mission of wartime radio has remained the same: to boost or destroy morale through entertainment and information. Nowhere was this more evident than the Vietnam conflict. Vietnam Radio First Termer provides the first comprehensive examination of the use of radio in Vietnam. By doing so, it adds another dimension to the history of the war, at a time when Americans are reassessing our involvement there. By actively engaging veterans in the research and production of Vietnam Radio First Termer, the series will provide a valuable forum for veterans to share their Vietnam experiences.
What we start tape, Ted?
Go ahead, let it play, because I want to make an announcement.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
All right.
This is Jerry Irby from Philly. Big Jerry to all the Vietnam vets that knew me. And trying to get in touch with anybody who served with me in Company E, 3rd and the 47th, the 9th Infantry Division, and 67 at Dong Tam on the boats.
Vietnam Radio First Termer is being produced in association with WGBH-FM in Boston. To date, the project has been supported by the Massachusetts Foundation for the Humanities and Public Policy, the Massachusetts Council on the Arts and Humanities, the Fund for Tomorrow, and the William Joyner Center for the Study of War and Social Consequences at the University of Massachusetts in Boston. We welcome your assistance and support. Inquiries can be directed to Alexis Milner at Interlock Media Associates, Post Office Box 619, Cambridge, Massachusetts, 02238. Our telephone number is 617-491-3111. Thanks for listening. My name is David Osmond.